Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Come on! 14-year-old Josie grabbed her friend Anila by the hand. We won't be long. My mom won't bite. You'll see. Anila recoiled. Bite! She repeated, her eyes wide with fear. No bite! Josie laughed. Just an English expression. You'll like meeting my mom. Mom? Anila repeated. Who is mom? My mother, Josie replied. Also called mom in the U.S. Come on, we'll be at my house in a minute. Then we can have a snack before we do homework. Anila's eyes grew bright with tears. Can't do homework. Too hard. Josie stopped walking. You know, she began, I could never understand anything if it weren't in English. You've done an amazing job, only being here such a short time. It's a shame it's nearly the end of the school year. You should be in an ESOL class in the fall. That should help.
ESOL?
Anila carefully repeated the two-syllable word. What is ESOL? Oh, I'm sorry, Josie began walking again. That's a special class for students who need to learn English. You'll like it a lot. Anila smiled.
Do they have one for whole family? She asked.
From a parent's perspective, how can we help youngsters who have difficulty speaking English? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest today has been teaching English as a second language for 23 years. Pauline Wallstein is a resource teacher for ESOL, English for Speakers of Other Languages, at Magruder High School in Montgomery County, Maryland, and also teaches social studies classes for ESOL students. Several years ago, she won the award for ESOL High School Teacher of the Year. Pauline is the mother of two grown daughters and has one young grandchild. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Pauline.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
What's the biggest difficulty children have in a school setting when the language they hear all around them is not their own?
Okay, I'd say the biggest difficulty they have is the inability to communicate. They don't understand what others are saying, and others cannot understand them. Language communicates culture. And students, if you don't speak the language, you don't understand the cultural concepts behind it.
Is English especially hard because we have so many colloquialisms, so many slang words, and they seem to crop up every day or two?
It is very difficult. For example, take the word read, R-E-A-D. It's spelt the same way, but it also sounds like red. Then we have the word red as a color. There is a very poor fit between the sound of the language and the way it's written. That makes it very difficult. In Spanish, every syllable is pronounced. There's not a gap between the speaking and the reading.
So I can imagine words like tough and thought and that kind of business drive everyone crazy.
Especially taught and thought. They have a lot of trouble with that. An example of what had happened with someone is I have an ESOL student who had to go to the doctor to get a blood test. And he's been in the country for about a year and a half. And the doctor said to him, come back tomorrow to take a fasting blood test. Well, he never asked what the word fasting meant. He thought it was a fast blood test. And he went to his job, which is at McDonald's. He had lunch, and then he went for the blood test. The result was they said he had very high cholesterol, high triglycerides.
Little stress there.
Right. And it's such an easy misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm. And that just gives you an example of how difficult it is for these children.
It's really amazing when you think the ones that succeed, it's like going over so many different hurdles to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a developmental window that you see when children can learn a language more easily? You know, we always get the myth that children learn languages better when they're younger and forget it when they get to be teenagers and so forth.
I think that is true. Elementary age students learn much quicker than high school students. For example, my mother came here from another country and she was the middle child of seven siblings. And she was fortunate enough to be put in third grade. She was age 11. She had no ESOL classes, but she had a very loving, caring teacher who gave her lots of extra time. She ended up speaking English fluently without an accent. Her older siblings, who didn't have this advantage, spoke English with accents their entire life.
Oh, my. Just an interesting contrast.
Yes.
How new is the whole concept of ESOL? I was thinking when you told the story of your mother, you know, didn't exist years
ago. Sure, sure. I think it varies from place to place in the country. But in this area, it has been in existence for at least 40 years. started off very small, but mm-hmm. it's grown and grown, and we have a phenomenally large population throughout the country of students who speak English as a second language.
I've never been able to understand how an ESOL class actually operates.
Okay, well, basically, and I'm going to discriminate between high school English and elementary. In high school, first off, when students come here, they're put in grade by age. So that means it is not uncommon to have an 18-year-old in ninth grade, which is very difficult. In this country, you could be in high school until you're 21. So they put them in by grade. But when you talked about proficiency, they're put in an ESOL class by English language proficiency. So, for example, you could have a typical beginner class, I'll just call it level one, that could have students in there in ninth grade that go anywhere from 14 to 18 years old. Mm-hmm. So it's proficiency within the grade. You could also have in a level one class, ninth graders, 10th, 11th, and 12th. Depends on their proficiency.
Does that mean that the child who's put in ninth grade, who's mm-hmm. 18 or whatever, mm-hmm. is in ninth grade for math, science, whatever, phys ed, the whole art, everything, or just in the ESOL class?
Well, that's a good question. They're given a math test when they come in to the school, or at least in our school system, they're given a math test, and they determine what math level they should be put in. So there was a boy from China who was put in level one because of his language proficiency. He was age appropriate. But when he took a math test and he used a dictionary, he was put in calculus. Mm-hmm. And just to tell you another anecdote, this boy was magnificent. He went to Harvard because he picked up the language very quickly, as you could imagine. But he started off in level one.
And calculus.
And calculus, right. And he sat there with the dictionary day after day after day.
Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. You always think that there must be an extra hurdle that kids have to get through, or anybody, if they're coming where the language has characters that aren't even the characters we're used to, and it's written in a different configuration, up or down, or mm-hmm. right to left, or whatever.
That's very good. That we have a lot of, those students have a lot more problems than a student from a Spanish-speaking country, which uses the same alphabet. I think there's a really big problem with students, many students that I've had who come from Iran, Iraq, because mm-hmm. the alphabet is backwards. They have a lot of spelling problems. Mm-hmm. They have tremendous spelling problems.
Sure.
I hate to make generalizations, but they do. I mean, they pick up the oral language the same as anybody else, but the writing is very difficult.
Well, and also, are those also languages where whatever the squiggle is that stands for that sound means that sound no matter where it is,
exactly.
rather than our interesting language where right. there are 75 exceptions to every rule?
Exactly. We have a very difficult language to learn. Just the letter A could have so many sounds. The letter E, it's very hard. We try to do pronunciation exercises. But your original question was, how does an ESOL class operate? So once it is determined what level of English language proficiency a student goes into, there are four skills that are common to all levels. They are listening, speaking, reading, and writing. Those are the four skills. When a student is in level one, there's much more of an emphasis on the listening and speaking. As the student's proficiency increases, then there's much more reading and writing and in the coursework itself. But listening and speaking is always part of it.
Which makes sense. And you think if somebody is in a foreign country and there's an emergency, you know, now we're living in the United States with mm-hmm. sort of emergency in our sort of the back of our heads all the time, mm-hmm. and someone shouts a direction or says danger or something, they need to be able to process that pretty fast.
Right. And in the beginning level, we teach it much more communicatively, survival skills. How do you make a doctor's appointment? How do
for
you get
fast
on a
blood
bus?
Test. I want the quickest one you got.
Things like going to a metro. There's a lot of, in the lower levels, there's a lot of role playing. We take kids around the building and introduce them just geographically where things are. We have them meet people and prepare questions to do an interview. The questions might be as simple as, what is your name? What is your job? Do you like it? but you're starting into the conversational vein immediately. Mm-hmm. Now, in the upper levels, you're doing things that are much less concrete, you know, more conceptual, higher order thinking skills. And you start to introduce that also at the lower levels. But you have to have a base to build on.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on English as a second language.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with ESOL teacher Pauline Wallstein about English as a second language.
What's the difference between what goes on in a high school ESOL class and what goes on in elementary school?
Okay, well, instruction in the elementary school is developmentally appropriate. For example, pre-K to kindergarten, they learn language through play and stories. First and second graders have play, direct instruction. Third through fifth give explicit attention to academic vocabulary, skills, and strategies. On the elementary level also, most of the time it's a pull-out program. By that, students are in a regular English American class, mainstream class, but they will have an ESOL teacher who will come into the classroom and either take them out for ESOL instruction during the time that the other students are having English language arts instruction. There are several models, however. There are other models where the ESOL teacher goes into the classroom and, you know, just works, helps the student. There's another model where the ESOL teacher and the mainstream teacher work together in the classroom, and then they work with the ESOL students separately. High school is not a pull-out model. In high school, they have schedules. They're scheduled, as you said, for PE, math, science, and they have ESOL for a dedicated time during the day.
So the theory is that their English skills should be good enough to take them through science, social studies, although the social studies, it sounds like maybe they make allowances for that.
Right, in the high school level.
Yeah, and then, but they don't have the regular English class. That's the time when they come to the ESOL class?
Correct.
So they don't have to read Jane Eyre or something. Okay.
Very true, yes.
I bet there are a lot of other kids who'd like to come out. What role should English-speaking adults play in connection with these youngsters? We all have seen these kids and we think, gee, what can we do that would be helpful besides speaking more slowly?
Research says that native speaker adults can provide the best modeling for English language learners. I'm using the word English language learner synonymously with ESOL. That's the new terminology. These people can do tutoring with children. They could give support to the family. For example, support helping the family deal with cultural issues, issues that involve rent, you know, any kind of the basic things, phone calls. English language adults could play a wonderful role by volunteering in the school. They can work in the schools one-on-one with students doing reading. There are people that I know who work for various businesses, and they're given time off to go into the school as a volunteer, and they're permitted to do that. And they work with the same student day after day after day. Also, they must, as you said, not just speak slowly, but really have patience. Have a lot of patience, smile, be warm, be welcoming. When the students get older, they can really help high school age students find jobs and give opportunities for community service.
It's funny when you think of talking to somebody who doesn't speak your own language. The things we do are so dumb. We speak more loudly. We put funny suffixes on the end, no-y, go-y, there-y, you know.
Thinking that they will understand
stupid
that.
Stuff. Yes, mm-hmm. And you think, you know, and you think what these kids are picking up. Of course, it might also help those adults who need to clean up our language a little bit.
Pauline, what kinds of things should parents be doing at home to reinforce what their children are being taught in their ESOL classes?
Okay. Before I answer that, I'd like to address the fact that we have many students coming here from other countries whose parents not only do not speak English, but who are illiterate in their own language. And that is not a unique phenomenon. It's It's a problem throughout the country, so I'm going to address that issue first. Okay, even though a parent may not speak English, even though they can't help with reading, they could still encourage their children to read, read, read. I would say take the child to a public library, make sure they take books out. They could take books out in their own language. The idea of reading is crucial. Even if you're reading in your own language, the skills are transferable. The skills of decoding, concept understanding, character development, plot, all of that is transferable to English. So I would say really encourage your child. Beyond that, check their homework, even if you can't read it. Ask them to show you what they're doing. Set aside a time. Make sure that they are doing their work. Have them tell you what they learned that day, whether you understand the language or not. Have them tell you. That's a way that you get educated, and the child reinforces their learning.
It's interesting. There have been some studies done, I believe, about immigrants from certain countries, I believe Southeast Asia, who come in with no knowledge of the language. I'm not sure whether these people were illiterate in their own language, mm-hmm. but certainly the commonality was the drive,
mm-hmm.
the drive to have the children succeed. And the studies were showing that the people who really had that drive had the kids read all the time, had the kids tell them about their homework. There was always that involvement to make the kids responsible to the adults
mm-hmm.
for what was going on.
Well, I think that's very true. Going back to the example of my mother, okay? She went to school, but she didn't go to high school. I mean, she finished, I think, till eighth grade. That was what was common. And then she needed to go to work. And she didn't know that much about the schooling. Of course, she could read, but she made it such a point that I always had to do work. She would go to Barnes & Noble and buy the textbooks to reinforce what was going on. So it's crucial that any parent keeps their interest going, that they really make the child know that they really care and they want them to succeed.
Many years ago, friends of ours in Boston had a Fulbright Fellowship and were living in Afghanistan for a period of time, so you can tell it was a long time ago. And they met some families there who wanted to move to the United States. And in one particular case, a family said, when we get ready to move, can we send our sons to you first? So this couple, who had no children yet of their own, received these two young boys from Afghanistan. I will never forget them. I remember meeting them, and they came to live in their house. This couple didn't have a television because they were very academic. Both of them were teaching, and both of them had PhDs and so forth. They bought a television right away, and they monitored what these boys watched, but they made sure it was like an assignment. They had to watch television.
Well, I think television certainly plays a role because it helps the kids with the culture, but I'm not a very strong advocate of kids watching too much television. I think if they are busy engaging in play with toys, games, books.
Other kids.
And I think especially in the high school level, it doesn't matter. Just keep reading. It doesn't matter if what you're reading is Teen People magazine or, you know, and even if you don't understand a lot of it, just to do that. TV, I think, is kind of passive.
Yes,
you want to,
passive.
Right.
Yeah.
And even though they are absorbing some of the cultural things and some of the language, they're not reacting to it. They're not responding. And I think it's much better if they're doing something more active. I think just a parent talking to their child, having conversations, whatever the language, is very crucial.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on English as a second language.
For an audio cassette copy of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with ESOL teacher Pauline Wallstein about English as a second language.
What advice would you give English-speaking students who interact with these kids?
I've had many American student volunteers in my classroom, and I think the characteristics that seem to work best, first of all, being welcoming, smiling, having patience, really listening carefully, making eye contact. keep an open mind to cultural differences. Don't stare. Sometimes they stare at them because there are children who come from countries that wear a particular costume that's typical of their country. Be helpful. I think most of all, be a friend and appreciate and learn from the cultural differences. The one problem I had is I had an American girl who was a senior who came into my beginning level class, and she was wonderful. She helped all the kids. She was great. The only problem that happened is that one of the English language learners developed a crush on her.
Oh, no.
And he bought her a gift, and she came to me, and she said, "What do I do?" But the kids really warm, especially to another young adult, appear. So I think it's wonderful for them to be there, be accepting. And, you know, that situation was an extreme, but still it's very vital. Makes them feel good.
What about involving these kids from other countries in whatever the activities are of the English-speaking kids, taking them to a club or taking them, not a nightclub,
a school club
or a neighborhood swimming pool or, scouting or something of interest.
I think that would be wonderful. That would be a really good way to immerse them in the culture. And it's also students that I've had that have joined school teams and clubs, their English has gotten better dramatically. Unfortunately, there are many students that are very shy and they're very uncomfortable going into an environment where they feel they won't be understood and they're just absolutely silent. Whereas they're in the ESOL class and they're babbling away. Yes, it would be wonderful to do that. And I think the best way is if someone takes them by the hand and leads them. So that would be excellent.
What about bringing them home?
Well, they would have to do that as well. Right. One of the boys wanted to do the swim team, and so after school I would drive him to the swim team practices, and little by little he found people to take him home. So sometimes that extra helping hand really bridges the gap.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was thinking about bringing them to the English-speaking student's house to meet the family, to see how an American home is, and also it would be a safe place without a whole lot of other people,
Absolutely. The way
a club would be or something like that.
Absolutely.
How successful would you say ESOL classes are today?
From my experience, I have never seen a child not learn. I mean, even students that we have, and we do have students who have had severely interrupted education. These are the ones that came here at age 18, ninth grade. They've had 3 or 4 years of schooling. Their native language proficiency is poor. They can't read and write. I've seen even students like that you thought would, how could they be successful, really learn. They really learn. And I will say that very often in terms of those four skills, their listening and speaking is much, much better than their reading and writing, but they've made enormous progress. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it depends on what the student brings with them to the school. Two girls came this year, two sisters. They started off in the beginning level of ESOL. They went into ROTC. Which, for those of you who don't know, is training for the Army. It's a school-based program. And you have to make speeches. You have to, wear a uniform. It's an amazing program.
Very demanding.
Very demanding. Yeah. Tremendous discipline. These girls, within the 1 year, went from the beginning level ESOL to out of ESOL.
Oh, wow.
And I think it's because they did what you said. They made arrangements to get into programs that had American students in them. And they were terrific. So as students like that also brought with them very good backgrounds. They are going to learn more quickly.
Are colleges on the lookout for these kids? Are they willing to sort of go the extra mile to help them?
Yes, there have been quite a number of ESOL students who have gotten full 4-year scholarships. These are the students, however, who either on their own reached out for this or were really encouraged by the staff of the school. It's so crucial, the adults that the students interact with, that where they receive a sense of self and so forth. But yes, schools look out for them. Yesterday in my school, I had a girl helping me, and she's a ninth grader, and she's a whiz on the computer. And I had someone come in who's in the computer division, and I said, I introduced them, and I said, you may want to work with him as an assistant. He said, oh, my gosh, what do you want to do? She said, computers. He said, you will have such a good time because you're a female and because you're bilingual. So, yes, it's there. It is definitely there. But, some people need more of a push and encouragement.
So all the adults who are listening,
exactly,
perk up your ears.
That's right. Yeah, right. And please volunteer. Yeah. You will love it.
What resources would you suggest for all our listeners who are now ready to volunteer or to help their children or people in their neighborhood, et cetera?
Okay, if you are looking to volunteer, the best advice that I could offer you is find out your local school system, either website or phone number, call them up, find out what you can do. There are always needs. I started off as an ESOL teacher as a volunteer. And I went to the school system. I did an informational interview with ESOL. They called me back. It was 1 month to go, and they said, we have two little children who are new from a Middle Eastern country. They really could use help. Would you like to try it? I said, sure. I went. I tried it. I got hooked. I took courses in, you know, graduate school, and I became certified and became a teacher. So that is the best way. Also, there are volunteer organizations. Call the school in your area. Find out what their needs are.
Is it called ESOL nationwide, or would there be another kind of name that people should know?
Right. In this area, it's ESOL. In other areas, it's ESL. And the new acronym is ELL, which is English Language Learners.
Okay. So if parents or adults who are interested, just explain that it's for students for whom English is not their primary language.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the acronym happens
right,
to be.
Exactly.
Okay. They mm-hmm. can say it begins with an E.
Right.
Okay. Well, Pauline Wallstein, this was such a pleasure to have you. You've given such important information to all of our listeners. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 229. Tell us what station you're listening to if you can. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Washington, D.C. with Kids is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.